श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय, श्री नवदीप धाम की जय, गंगा माई की जय, जमुना माई की जय, भक्ति देवी की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, समवेद भक्त वृंद की जय. All glorious is some of the waters, all glorious is some of the waters. All glorious is some of the waters, all glorious the Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Nitai Guru Pramanda Yadi. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Dostaya Vitale, Srimati Bhakti Guru Pashama Nitai 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 Guru Vana Pachara Nama Vasesha, Sunya Vadi Pashkatu Dezitai. When Prabhupada first started giving class at 22nd Avenue, they had a little signboard of classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the window on Bhagavad Gita. So many of the people in those days in the 60s were thinking, what other book is he going to lecture on, like Tibetan Book of the Dead or some other contemporary book after the Bhagavad Gita is done or the other days of the week, because no one could consider, practically speaking, that you could study one book and learn everything from it, because people's minds weren't focused in that way. They also thought that every goal was the same. And Prabhupada had lectured on the Bhagavad Gita in the evening, and then every morning he would speak, or sometimes he would actually speak about Chaitanya Charitamrita. When he started writing teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he lectured for some days on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Sanatana Goswami. But here, in the mornings, we will speak about Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, Bhagavatam means in relationship to Krishna, Bhagavan. He who is all attractive, who possesses all opulence, and as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, that we could do this, practically speaking, forever. Just speak about Krishna and glorify Krishna. And we would never reach the end of his glories. And yes, so I was just saying that in case anyone was wondering what book we were going to speak about this morning. It's the Bhagavatam. And we're going to hear about, continuing, His Holiness Devi Mitra spoke yesterday about a very important verse the last few days. The verses. And Prabhupada himself typed these verses, the purports, the verses and translations and purports. And later on, even perhaps in the second canto, he started dictating them. But here he personally typed them. And he also said that because he wasn't sure whether he was going to be able to complete the whole Bhagavatam, because he started in his late 60s, wasn't sure he was able to complete the translation. She's so enthusiastic. She or he again, I can't remember. Well, let her stay. Because during the kirtan, she was clapping. Special soul. So Prabhupada said he wasn't sure whether he was going to be able to complete the Bhagavatam, so he put everything in the first canto, everything that's required. And actually the first canto is so special, because you get the most intimate glimpses of Krishna, especially in these chapters here, chapter 7 to chapter 11, you get the most intimate glimpses of Krishna that you'll get until the 10th canto, practically speaking. In the 3rd canto, Sri Uddhava describes Krishna to whom? Who is he speaking to? Who is Uddhava speaking to in the third canto?
Vidur.
Yes. So there's that, and he in deep separation from Krishna, Uddhava is speaking about because Krishna has just left the planet, and he's speaking to Vidur. But other than that, this is the most intimate glimpse, and we're going to get a glimpse of Krishna. We're going to get to see through the eyes of one of Krishna's devotees, who is related to Krishna because she is Vasudeva's sister, so Krishna is her. What would be the Hindi word for it? The maternal brother's daughter, son. Is what? Brother's son. Huh? Yeah, I know what it is in English. Huh?
Bhatija.
Bhatija. Huh? Bhaja. So there's two relationships going on at the same time with her. And it's quite interesting, and this comes out at the end of her prayers, that she's seeing him as her nephew, her Bhaja?
Bhana.
Nephew. and also she's seeing him as the supreme unlimited personality of Godhead. Both at the same time. Now it appears to be contradictory, but it, because if he's unlimited and unborn, and she'll even speak about this in the 31st verse, when she's describing the inconceivable nature of Yashoda Maya's relationship with Krishna. And even more than that, she'll speak about Krishna's inconceivable relationship with Yashoda Maya, because she's going to describe how Krishna's crying when Mother Yashoda's chastising him. How is that possible? So that's even more inconceivable, but Kunti Devi is putting together these two inconceivable parts. And what of the, here is the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead, and he's my nephew. And what reconciles these things is the affection of the relationship. That is how they are put together. The inconceivability is reconciled by bhakti, by prema bhakti especially. Even though Kunti Devi is thinking that I have no prema bhakti, Yashoda Maya has all the bhakti, I have nothing. This is the nature of bhakti. This is the benediction we read about in the that is given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The very nature of bhakti is no matter how much you have, you think I have none. Even Prabhupada once in a lecture described Srimati Radharani as saying that this devotee, when we approached Krishna, he said, so Prabhupada was saying in his lecture, that when you take a flower, you offer it to Srimati Radharani and say, you give this to Krishna. And then Srimati Radharani says, oh, here's your devotee. It's a better devotee than me. Please bless him. So we are reading from the Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam means about Krishna, because everything in the Bhagavatam is about Krishna, directing our consciousness towards our relationship with Krishna. So that will awaken and blossom. That's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Prema Pamarto Mahan, so that our relationship with Krishna will blossom, and our relationship with the world of matter will diminish, will wither and die. Or rather, seeing it as matter, as separate from Krishna, as meant for our pleasure as opposed to Krishna's pleasure. In other words, that the vision born of ahankar vamudharma, kart aham, I am the one who's doing everything, false ego, that vision will wither and die, and the vision of this is all Krishna's, and this is what this verse is about. It's so we'll read it. And there is a relationship between this verse and the previous verse that Maharaj read yesterday. So, in the 27th verse, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Namo Kinchana Vittaya.
Namo Kinchana Vittaya.
Nirita Guna Vittaye.
Nirita Guna Vittaye.
Atma Ramaya Santaya.
Atma Ramaya Santaya.
Kaivaya Pataye Nama.
Kaivaya Pataye Nama.
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 All obeisances unto you. So the first word in this verse and the last word are obeisances. So and everything else will be defining who Kunti Devi is offering obeisances to. Akinchana Vittaya. Unto the property of the material impoverished. So in the previous verse, she said, Tvam Kinchana Gochara, you are the property of those who do not possess anything in this world. So it's the same principle here. Akinchana Vittaya, you are the property of the materially impoverished. Nivritta, completely transcendental. To the actions of the material modes. Guna, material modes. Vrittaye,
affection.
So that word is affection. Vrittaye. Atma aramaya,
one who is self-satisfied.
She's speaking about Krishna here and saying who she's offering obeisances to, even though he's standing there right in front of her, but one who is the property of the material impoverished, Kinshana Vittaya, Navrittaguna Vrittaye, completely transcendental to the actions of the modes of material nature. And he's right in front of her, effulgent, so beautiful. And on his chariot, ready to leave. And Atmaramaya, who is self-satisfied. Now how do you convince someone who is self-satisfied to do what you want them to do? So this is the problem, but she's pointing it out here. Because usually you say, oh please do this. Trying to get someone to do something and use something to move them around based on what they want. If you do what I want you to do, you'll get what you want. But he's self-satisfied. And what motivates someone who is atmarama, self-satisfied, into action? This is the secret of the Bhagavatam. And of course the answer is bhakti, the bhakti of his devotee. And Prabhupada's going to explain this in the purport, and this is Kunti Devi's explained it already. So this is the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. And then by the time you get to the 10th canto, and then we understand that completely, then we see the extent, and Kunti Devi will hint about it again in the 31st verse of this chapter, we'll see the extent that Krishna is controlled by bhakti. By the love of his devotees. How do you get someone who is completely self-satisfied to do anything? And the answer is by bhakti, to the extent that Krishna becomes completely under the control of his devotees. Santaya,
the most gentle.
Kaivalya Pataye. the master of the monists. Namaha. Bowing down. So Krishna is the master of the monists too. Because what are the monists, the impersonalists, desiring? What do they desire? Liberation. What does liberation mean? Freedom. Freedom from? Yeah, from all the sufferings of existence. They want to get out of material existence. Even at the cost of their own existence, they want to get out. Material suffering is so bad. But he is the master of those people. Does anyone know the verse of the Bhagavatam that describes Krishna? And Mahaprabhu, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he said, "I'm changing the word from Mukti Pade to Bhakti Pade," and yeah, he said that, and Mahaprabhu said no, and he said, "Krishna is the shelter of Mukti." Also, so what's the verse? No? This is in the second canto, when it describes the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Narodha, Mukti, Ashraya. He is the Ashraya, or the shelter even of Mukti. That Mukti takes shelter in him. So he is the controller of Mukti, of liberation too. And he is the perfection of liberation. And Mukti... Krishna Kanamrita, we heard this lecture of Prabhupada so many times when he described. Did anyone ever hear that lecture where Prabhupada describes Bilva Mangala Thakur, the author of Krishna Kanamrita, his life? Did anyone ever hear that lecture? It's so nice. And Prabhupada, at the end, near the end of this description, he says, "The Mukti Lady is standing there with folded hands to the devotee, saying, thanks, with folded hands to the devotee." And Prabhupada knew the Sanskrit of this. And he said, "Mukti Lady is standing, the liberation is standing there with folded hands, offering obeisances to the devotee, saying, what can I do for you?" That Mukti becomes the servant of the devotees. And then Prabhupada continues saying, what is the need for Mukti? And speaking about Bila Mangala Thakur, when Krishna himself is coming to bring you milk every day to feed you. What is the value of Mukti? Kaivalya and a Kaya day, considered by the devotees to lose one's individuality and the ability to serve Krishna. Just think of what these exalted devotees are experiencing in their relationship with Krishna. To think of freedom from misery, which we're all just like wishing we were free from all the miseries of material life. Thinking about like hell without service to Krishna. So how much, and we're thinking, how can I get out of this service? Or I'm thinking, how can I get out of that service? Or this hurts, or that hurts. But the devotees who are really exalted in their relationship with Krishna, they don't have these considerations. They're tasting Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati. They're tasting their relationship with Krishna. So I'll read the translation and then please repeat after me. My obeisance is unto you. Now listen, class, listen carefully. I'll read the first and then after. Read it bit by bit and then repeat after me, okay? Fold your hands, otherwise into the corner. My obeisance is unto you, or unto you. No, no. It's always the big ones in the back sitting in the chair. The oldest ones sit in the back. I remember that when I was teaching. They give you trouble. Now you listen carefully, okay? First you listen and then you'll have your chance. My obeisance is unto you. I'm such a bad teacher that no one's learning anything but some people. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the masters of the monists. Wow. The way Prabhupada translates, how self-satisfied is connected with being most gentle. What a wonderful connection. Self-satisfied. If we're self-satisfied, we can become gentle. And if we're not self-satisfied, we become angry and not gentle. Because we're angry at everyone for not satisfying us. And no one can be satisfied by anything external. We have to be self-satisfied means in our relationship with Krishna ultimately. Okay, Mahatma Prabhu, you ready? I'll read a bit, short amount, and you please, with everyone else, please. My obeisances are unto you.
My obeisances are unto you.
Who are the property of the materially impoverished.
Who are the property of the materially impoverished.
You have nothing to do,
with the actions and reactions
of the material modes of nature.
You are self-satisfied.
And therefore,
you are the most gentle
and are master of the monists. Now who remembers, without looking, who remembers something from that verse? In English or Sanskrit, tip on the Sanskrit. Who remembers something without looking? The master of the monists. Yeah. He's the master of the monists. Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Excuse me? Yes. The master or the property of the material. That means, this will, of course we'll speak about, but those who are materially impoverished, Krishna, they can control Krishna, like one can control one's own property. Now, obviously this doesn't mean that being poor, having no material assets automatically qualifies one to control Krishna, because in the last verse this point was explained very clearly, that if the problem with having material assets isn't the material assets themselves, and Prabhupada will speak about this in the purport, the problem of having material assets is when we think that they are mine and are meant for my pleasure. They are mine and meant for my pleasure. That's the problem with it. And then, when one is in difficulty, in any kind of distress, these material assets, if one has this type of a false ego, they become our shelter. So, like Draupadi, when Dushyanta was trying to pull her cloak, she was holding on with one hand and calling out to Krishna with the other hand, and Krishna wasn't coming. So this is the problem with material assets, is that we call, when we take shelter of them, so to speak, because we end up calling out to Krishna with one hand and holding on to our material assets and thinking, well, if he's not going to help, well, at least I have my credit cards. What to speak of my iPhone? Then I have that as my shelter. This is the problem, and therefore Tama Kinshana Gochara. Yes, it is. I was wondering. Beautiful. So calling out to Krishna has to be with both hands. So Prabhupada also, when he talks about that concept of Tvama Kinshana Gochara, he gave two examples of a Kinshana Gochara. One was Srila Gaukasodas Babaji Maharaj, who really possessed not one single possession in this world. He was showing the example of a Paramahamsa who lived without relying on anything of the material world, no residence, no wealth, just nothing practically speaking. And the other example he gave was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who had so much wealth coming to him, but he used everything in Krishna's service, never thinking that anything belonged to him. And he said he built a big marble palace in Calcutta, Bagbazar Mat, which was very, very, very opulent. Very opulent, especially in those days. And he was a Kinchana, having so much wealth at his disposal. The Prabhupada was a Kinchana also. Well, he went to, in 1977, he was in Bhubaneswar. And he had, when he would come to Melbourne, he would be treated like a king. When he'd go to Los Angeles, he would be treated like a king. And when he was in the manor, anywhere he would go in the world, he would be treated. He said, everywhere I go, there's a smell of fresh paint. Because everyone, they would newly paint everything. Of course, at the last minute, and it wouldn't have time to dry. And actually, when Prabhupada came here for the first time and sat on his guest, the marble of this part of the floor wasn't even polished, but the lotus was the only part polished when he came in the first visit. And then when he was in Bhuvaneswar, though, he was living in a hut and bathing by the pump and pouring water on himself by the pump water. Not a test. Living on a different level. So, it doesn't mean that one has to be impoverished, and that certainly, if poverty would gain Krishna completely, then then that would be the easiest thing. All the people in the dole office would be with Krishna all the time, or whatever. But no. It's this question of holding on. What are we holding on to? And that's a question that Prabhupada also once told the story of how he was on the train and he saw a very poor man at the Calcutta station carrying a piece of wood, a tree branch that he was going to use for burning or something. And he was very attached to that, the person who was carrying it. So we can become attached to anything in this world. And that's going to get in the way, she's saying. And she's looking at herself, now I'm the queen mother, my sons are Yudhisthira Maharaj and the other Pandavas are the king, and you are the property of the impoverished, those who hold on to nothing in this world. And what will be our shelter when it's time to leave this world? What will give us shelter? This is the question that we have to be able to answer with both hands. And Prabhupada also used to tell the story of he actually knew someone who was a very, very wealthy person who was dying, and he told the doctor that I'll give you, in those days, $10,000 or whatever it was, how much, if you'll prolong my life for so many years so I can finish all my plans. And no one can prolong one's life for even one moment. And what are we going to hold on to when it's time to go? It's going to be time to go. And what will we hold on to? Where will our Shraddha be? Firmly, Vishwas. What will we be able to hold on to with unshaking conviction? And life is meant to bring us to that point. That's what human life is meant. To bring us to that point that with both hands we could hold on to Krishna's name, Krishna's form, and Krishna's devotees. Krishna's, yeah. So, Prabhupada's purport is very long, and Krishna willing, I don't think there's any way I'm going to be able to read it all. And because the first part is so powerful. it's short, and then Prabhupada starts giving examples. But please listen here. Please listen. This is what Prabhupada wants us to hear after hearing Kunti, these words of Kunti Devi. Now here are the words of Prabhupada to explain it. A living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Now we'll go over this sentence by sentence. This few sentences only we'll read. But remember that one. A living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. A living being renounces something for gaining something more valuable. A student sacrifices his childish proclivities. Proclivities means, I heard it, tendencies. So a child, the student sacrifices his childish tendencies, proclivities. What is it? What are the tendencies of a child to want to do all day long? Why does he do that? To gain better education. Something better. A servant gives up his job for a better job. That's also so interesting. Not an employee gives up his job. Having a job means you're a servant of your boss. That creature, that terrible creature known as boss. Means you're a servant. No one wants to hear that. But that's what it is. Similarly, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible. Tangible means you can hold it, you can feel it. It's yours, it's real. Tangible means it's real. A servant gives up his job for a better job. Similarly, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible and spiritual value. So we'll just talk, read that again. Those few sentences are so powerful and so important that we understand deeply. A living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Because, in other words, and then Prabhupada says it, explains it further, therefore a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. You cannot give up everything. Even in India, even sometimes the Jain leaders, what are they called? Digambar, which means their only clothes are the four directions. So they're so renounced, and they wear the cloth over there so that they don't kill any living entity. But yet they have to breathe. Can they renounce breathing? Can they renounce the beating of the heart? Can they renounce eating? They cannot. You cannot be fully renounced in this world. There's a limitation. Because if one was renounced anything from everything, we wouldn't exist anymore. So therefore Prabhupada says we cannot be a renouncer. And when one, the only way to stop wanting to hold on to something is to be dead when you're not there. When the soul has left the body, the body no longer holds on to anything. So this is something very important for us to accept right now, that we cannot be fully renounced. We have to hold on to something. We have to possess something. So then the question is, what is there to possess that it gives us that is of true value for us? Because naturally, Prabhupada explained with several examples, that you give up, it's easy to renounce something lesser for something greater. It's easy to renounce $5 for $100. It's easy to renounce that. Good example, yeah? One that strikes right to the heart. What were the examples that Prabhupada gave? He gave two examples. A child giving up childish propensities to play for what's really good for him, which is education, to learn something to prepare for the rest of life. What was the second example?
Job.
A job. You give up a bad job when you get a better job. That type of renunciation is the renunciation that is easy to do. So therefore, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing. Because, and this is the problem that impersonalists and Mayavadis always run into, that they want to remove everything from their mind, have a concept-free mind, because they see the goal as impersonalism, or sunyavad, or nothingness. All one, all is all nothing, it's all the same. So therefore they're trying to remove everything in their mind, and they can't do it. They can't do it. It's not possible. So how is this relevant for the devotees? How is this point relevant for the devotees? These points, Prabhupada says it. Would you like to say? Mahatma Prabhu, you would like to say.
We want to hold on to the holy name.
Yes. We want to hold on to the spiritual world. But if we don't have a taste for the holy name, for the beautiful forms of Sisi Radhabalava, Gornatai, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra. If we don't get that taste and want that taste and keep them in our consciousness, we're going to be plagued because we can't have nothing there. We're going to, and then we're thinking of all the things that we're not supposed to think about. And I mean that in the sense of, oh, I'm not supposed to think about this. The example I was given is, don't think about monkeys. I want you all not to think about monkeys. What color of the monkeys that you're not thinking about? Are they blue ones? Don't think about yellow monkeys, for example. So how do you not think about something without first putting the thing that you're supposed to not think about in your mind so you can get rid of it? You have to conceptualize monkey before you can say, can't get the monkey out of my mind. So all the things that we're not supposed to do, the yam-niyams, become so difficult, and it's such a struggle because they're always in our mind, unless we don't renounce the material world for nothing, but for something tangible in spiritual value, substantial in spiritual value, the holy name. Especially Panchanga Bhakti, the holy name, Sri Vigraha. Look at their forms. Is it even possible to look at Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi and not be miserable? I showed this one little video someone gave me to the students on Wednesday. And I didn't put in the whole thing, but there's this little video of a kirtan. I don't know where it was when His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was there. It was so nice to see him dancing, and His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj was there, and His Holiness Indradumna Maharaj was there, and His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj was there, and His Holiness Kunigrah. And the kirtan was so incredible. And everyone was madly chanting and dancing. And what I didn't put in that video was that it said we have consulted. There was a subtitle at the beginning that said, or introduction saying, we have consulted many devotional experts about what is the best cure for depression. and according to their advice, we're presenting this cure. And then it goes into this wild kirtan. Everyone is dancing. Just look at what happens. Just look at Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra now. Just, can you not smile practically? It's almost, you can't do it. You can look, you can test me, we can make a scientific experiment. Yes. They're so beautiful and so nice, and it's not material, and going to tie, invoking us to us to chant with both hands in the air. And Mahaprabhu's life, and Nityananda Prabhu's life is the examples of how to live a devotional life with both hands in the air, calling for Krishna's mercy. And if we don't trust that Krishna's mercy is going to come when we call, then how will we do that at the most difficult time? So we have to possess something. So it's actually urgent that we possess something tangible. And that tangible thing is eternal. That's the difference between some existence and non-existence, sat and asat, defined in the Bhagavad Gita. So there is some urgency, especially before the end of our life, to understand that spiritual reality is more tangible than what we think of as reality, which is always fluid and changing. We think of this as reality because we can see it. When we think of spiritual reality as something like smoke or something, because we can't see it. So therefore Krishna comes in the deity form. This is the verse we read a few days ago that I remember. To come right in our vision as the Acha Vigraha, to come right into our vision so we can see spiritual reality right with these same eyes that we're wondering if God is there, how come I can't see him? So he comes so you can see him. He accepts the form of the Acha Vigraha so you can see him with these very eyes. And he comes in the form of the holy name to give us a taste of what the spiritual world is like through our ears. And he comes in the form of prasadam, and he comes in all these different forms. He comes in the form of the Bhagavatam. Puranako dunodhitaha. The Bhagavatam arises like the sun to fill our intelligence, our consciousness, with thoughts about Krishna, of his form, his pastimes, his activities. It comes in the form of the holy place, the Dham. And it comes in the form of the devotees too, who carry bhakti with them. So when these fill our life, actually fill our consciousness, Krishna is tangibly there with us. And then the material world it takes on its true form. But Maya is very tricky, of course. But anyway, Prabhupada continues. But I thought these first lines were such a powerful introduction. So powerful, and to understand that we cannot live without possessing something. To be alive means to want to possess something. And since we must possess something. If we don't, there's some urgency in us possessing something of true spiritual value, or otherwise our consciousness must turn to possessing something on the material level. I thought that was so important, because it puts urgency into the practices of Krishna consciousness. A devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible in spiritual value. And it's interesting also to know that when Sri Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the devotees in Bengal were leaving Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu was praising them, and he said that there are three kinds of devotees. He ordered three of the devotees to interact in the world and in three different ways. And Prabhupada's purport explains this. Did you get a chance to read that one, Anirudha Prabhu, on Sunday? Did you read that one, that part, with the three different engagements for the devotees? I think it was Mukunda Raghunanda, the devotees of Srikanda. Mahaprabhu said, even a dog. What was it?
Oh, no, I said we read that was the last time we read, one of the last time. Yeah. That even a dog in your village is dear to me. What to speak of.
Kamutya Nyaya, what to speak of. So when Mahaprabhu was glorifying the devotees in Srikanda, it was Narahari Sakar, Mukunda, and Raghunanda. Raise your hand if you've been to Srikanda. So nice. Because there's the deity of Raghunanda where it's described that he had a ladu as the deity, got caught eating the food that was being offered by Raghunanda, and part of the ladu was still in his hand of the deity. So he said there are three ways that devotees, engagements for devotees. One worships the deity, another stays with the devotees and worships the deities, and the other interacts through preaching activities with the world, and the other lives in the world and earns money, etc. Three different ways that the devotees can, and they're all devotees, but they're all akinchana, because they're all devotees. Their wealth is in that which is tangible. So now Prabhupada will go on to give some examples. Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Dasa Goswami and others gave up their worldly pomp and prosperity for the sake of the service of the Lord. They were big men in the worldly sense. The Goswamis were ministers in the government service of Bengal. Ramakeli. Raise your hand if you've been to Ramakeli. I also haven't, but I want to go. The place of Rupa and Sanatana. And Srila Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a big jamindar of his time, landholder. But they left everything to gain something superior to what they previously possessed. The devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. The devotees are generally without material prosperity until they get their PR. But they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. Because their attention isn't on just more and more and more and more and more and more. Like to be a pukka materialist, you have to be like that. You want to succeed, you have to put your full consciousness on fighting all the other people who want to succeed. It's as they say, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and that's not very complimentary. Yeah, everyone is your competitor in the material world like that, and you have to beat them. Otherwise, they will beat you. That's the mood. Prabhupada said this, that unnecessary competition, too much competition. Just to survive, you have to fight. So, but the devotees, so they don't struggle in that way. Their struggle is to attain that tangible. Their struggle is to attain their very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord, and that means Krishna's service. So that's completely tangible. That is the jewel of their life. And having attained that jewel, they won't trade it for anything. So this is actually what it means to be a devotee, regardless of the externals of the engagement. What they truly treasure, what one truly treasures in the deepest, most secret part of our heart. What is our true treasure? And no one knows except for us, perhaps, and our dearest friends and Krishna. What is our true treasure? And how wonderful it will be that one day we can have such a heart that's free of the kama, krodha, lobha. And then this is described in commentary by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, when Krishna advents himself into the heart of Vasudev first. And there were how many children first were killed by Kamsa? Six. And these represent kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mother, and matsaya. What's the fifth one? Which means intoxication with material things. So then, when the heart is cleansed of all those things, lust, anger, and greed, and envy, illusion, intoxication, then Balaram, the seventh child, he descends into the heart. That's the Dham, Sandini Shakti. And because Krishna only goes to the Dham, those purified places that are not actually of the material world. When we speak technically, we don't say that Krishna descends to the material world, because he's never in the material world. He doesn't touch the material world. Sambhavam yatma maya. He's always in touch only with his own internal energy. So then the seventh is Balaram, and then the heart is like the heart becomes a dham, sanctified holy place, the most sanctified holy place. And then one calls, then Krishna can descend in the heart. Krishna's lotus feet can be placed in the heart. He will come. And then the devotee, after preparing his heart so carefully for Krishna, cleansing it for Krishna to come, and then Krishna will, he invites Krishna to live in the heart, and there's that purported in the 13th chapter of Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, or cleansing of the Gundicha temple, where he said, then, where was this? The Prabhupada describes it, I think it's also in the comments of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in such a real way. And then when you invite the Lord to the heart, then you should have a big festival and feed all the devotees. So one day that could be ours, with Krishna taking up residence in our heart. Now what treasure could be greater than that? What treasure can be greater than that? But it has to become so tangible for us. Otherwise the material world seems so real, and the spiritual world seems so far away. Now, that has to be reversed in a sense. Not that we not properly act in the material world and it's so far away that we bang into the walls and all that, but not like that, but we understand the nature of the material, the fleeting nature of the material world, and that it appears by Maya, Krishna's Maya Shakti, it appears so tangible. But it is always shifting and changing, and it is just as Krishna's powerful Maya Shakti that makes the material world appear to be reality. Reality means tangible, there, a shelter, true. Did anyone ever grow up in one place, like in a house or somewhere, and then go back many, many, many years later after not to that same place, and it's maybe the house has been sold or something like that. Has anyone ever had that experience to go back when you're an adult? What's the feeling? It's very peculiar.
Everything is so much smaller.
Everything is smaller. Yeah, that's the exact experience I had. Everything appeared so much smaller. And it's so peculiar because the time is the same, the place is the same, but the reality of the situation has changed. And the child holds on to those things as if they're real. And it's required for him to hold on to those things, to have a very stable upbringing like that, so he can be in the illusion that everything is reality. Otherwise, the children grow up unstably. If they don't have the illusion that these things are real, even though the adults know that it's not real, but the children have to think these are real, stable, always there. But the actual reality is you see when you get back there when you're older to your house that it's so peculiar because it doesn't match the image in your own consciousness. It's changed because that's the material world. Time changes everything. What's this one's name again? Amrit? Who is this?
Amrit.
Hare Krishna. Whose lap will you sit on? Okay. That's when the bridge buses saw. When in the 28th chapter of 28th chapter of the 10th canto, when the bridge buses when Nanda Maharaj gets kidnapped and goes to Varunaloka, then Nanda Maharaj tells all the cowherd men about, you know, Varuna was glorifying Krishna. Krishna's so good. He's so amazing. Varuna was glorifying him. And they began to think that we used to think that he's a great demigod or he's carrying the potency of Narayan in him, Narayan or Samoganai. And we saw him lift Giriraj Govardhan with one hand, and we thought so many things. But now we actually think that he must be the Supreme Lord. So then they began to think, well, what's going to be our destination after we leave this world? If we're the Supreme Lord, we're with the Supreme Lord. Are we going to get liberation? Are we going to go to this Vaikuntha? Even though they were in the topmost place, but they were acting, their mood was different. So then Krishna takes them and puts them in the Brahma Vidya, and they experience Brahman, Sanyuja Mukti, and Krishna lifts them out quickly. And then he brings them to Vaikuntha, where he's there, being glorified, and Krishna's there, and they're seeing Krishna as a cowherd boy, but he's being glorified by all the demigods, and he's being treated by all the praying to him, and he's in the opulences. And they were thinking that this is so wonderful to see Krishna again, after Sayuja Mukti, he didn't like that very much. But there's something strange here, because I see that we want to immediately run to him. This is our natural village relationship. We want to run to Krishna and hug him and feed him. And we can see that he actually wants to sit on our laps. That's what reminded me of this. Because Krishna used to grace the laps of all the cowherd men and all the cowherd ladies. And they used to just hug him, their lala. And it was just... So they could see this was such an awkward thing with the demigods there. glorifying Krishna. And they could tell that Krishna wanted to just run over and jump onto their laps. Mm-hmm. And they just said, Mother Yashoda would never be able to tolerate this place. Because how could she not feed him for a moment, for 5 minutes? He'll be coming over and the demigods, you know, wouldn't work because Mother Yashoda would want to be feeding him all the time and I'd be getting so thin. Feeding him. They conclude Mother Yashoda wouldn't be able to tolerate this place. And then they were back in Moma Vrindavan and they were so happy. So, Golok, when it becomes tangible, through the process of hearing Shastra, through the process of worshipping the deity, through the process of associating with devotees and chanting Krishna's holy names and being in the holy place, when it becomes tangible like that, then we'll be ready for anything and everything. Okay, so tomorrow, it shall continue, Krishna willing, with this purport. That was such a powerful section, and it goes on. Because Prabhupada basically explains each of the words, all the glorifications. All the glorifications of Krishna, Prabhupada explains the Kunti Devi scheme. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I remember my childhood, I was a son of farmer.
You were what?
Son of farmer.
Farmer, yes. Krishak. Krishak? Krishak.
Kisan.
Yes. Krishak. That's in Sanskrit. Yes? Well, Bengali, excuse me.
I used to pay a fee for when I was small, 6, 7 years old. My farmer looked so far away. I used to get frightened. I can still remember that. And people used to say, there's a ghost here, there's a ghost there, there's a snake here. And they said, okay, my mother used to say, when you go there, you call Rama, Rama, Rama. Then nobody come here. And sometimes call Hanuman.
Okay, no problem.
So when I look so
far, where is this class going? but wait. This is a comment or a question, just curiously.
No, you said, you know, when you go back to...
I said that so long ago.
And then, when I grow, you change, it's so small now. The farm is so small, and I can keep have a feeling when I'm a small now.
Yes. So how do you feel when you go there?
All things change, you know. I feel this is very small.
So this is the point was... The philosophical point, then. Do you remember what the philosophical point was?
Yes.
What was the philosophical point? But what was the philosophical point? Is that Maya makes things seem real and tangible, like substance. But actually, an experience like that makes us understand that that doesn't exist anymore. And we hold on to things in our mind, but they don't exist anymore. Things exist in our mind. This is Maya. This is Maya. We live on the mental platform. They don't have actual, tangible existence. Well, the spiritual world, the spiritual realm, if we can catch it, and plant Krishna's lotus feet on there. It's there for us in every circumstance, in every place, forever and ever and ever. Got it? That's the philosophical point. The power of Maya and the power of Krishna.
My parents had a policy that they would never return to the town that they previously lived in because it had all changed. And they were teachers, but when they came back, they weren't the kids' teachers anymore.
And the kids weren't kids anymore.
And they didn't like it because, you know, I guess it reminded them of the fact that things always change.
Yeah.
And it's just unpleasant.
And also, it's so peculiar because we identify, I'm a teacher, we have the upadhi, I'm the teacher of this. And then we're not anymore, we were a teacher, and this is who I thought I was. And then I'm not that anymore. So this is sarva upadhi vinaya mukta. And this is the very hard thing about getting old. One of the difficult things as you get old is you have so many upadhis that you think are you. And then you look in the mirror and you see that they're not, you can't hold on to them anymore, and you can't do the things you used to do. And it's so disturbing. You can't run anymore. I could run for hours without stopping. I can't even run for 30 seconds now. So that whole identity, I'm a runner, I can do these things, you know, I can do this, I can do that. One by one, they're taken away, stolen away by time. And it's so heavy because I thought that was me. I thought that was me, and it turned out not to be me. The one I thought, I am the one who can run. I am the student who did this in this year. I thought that was me, and then it all goes. And then who am I? I have all these false upadhis, overlays over who I think I am. You know, all these false, these identities. I'm a son, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a that. And and I hold on to them, but I can't hold on to them. That's the point. I can't hold on to them. So Prabhupada, when he wrote this, so then we don't have anything to hold on, and it's very frightening. So who am I really below the upadis? So what's the verse? Sarva upadhi sat vena niyamalam. What's there? Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. Bhakti ichate. The bhakti can be there. To serve the Lord of the senses with the senses. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimati Kunti Devi ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi Gaunatai. Sisi Radhavallabh. Sri Jagannath Baladev. Sri Vajra Devi ki jai. Sisi Radhavallabh. Bhaktivinoda ki jai.